the religious leaders that are present here. Thank you for this opportunity once more that you have given us. My name is Musa Kino, Bishop as a spiritual office. I come from 12 Apostles Church in Christ. I'll be sharing our input on the subject matters that we have been given. Madam Chair, the previous speakers that have spoken here, they went at large in terms of explaining or indulging in the subject of regulation of churches and regulation of faith and religion, which I will not be dwelling much on that, but I will be engaging on the subject of social ills and moral decay in our communities, which you have asked us to give us an input, to give you an input on that. In our engagement with your topic, we realize that we have to acknowledge that a society is made up of the groups of people, which mainly are the parents, adults, youth, and children, which form together homes. From there, we have traditional leaders and community leaders, we have political parties, churches, and we have you, the government, as our parent, which we have also to work together with you, and you must look after ourselves as your members. For any prosperous, disciplined, and developing society, we realize that it needs an active and deliberate participation of the above groups that I've just mentioned to shape the future of our communities and society and our country. Without a deliberate engagement and participation of those groups, we realize that it is not possible for us to have a disciplined society and perhaps a prosperous society. Looking at the, it is clear that only churches and homes are left with the responsibility for implementing some measures to sustain good morals in the society. And from the slide that I've just passed on now, because political parties and the government, traditional leaders and other community leaders are no longer participants in disciplining or in ensuring that the community is up to standard in terms of morals and social ills. Churches continue to restore humanity in people through teaching and preaching godliness and humanness to the communities. Churches remain the only hope of our society for restoration, sustenance of moral values and humankind, even in the current society rot and moral decay. We understand that most or over 60% of our population belongs to faith groups, belongs to Christian religion, as a major religion that prevails in South Africa. And without us engaging, or the government engaging the church groups, then it is almost impossible for the government to achieve the moral decay, the moral upliftment and the social ills of our society. Even though the churches continue to suffer from lack of financial support and other resource scarcity, such as land, church buildings, etc., churches continue with their work as it is spiritual that cannot be stopped or limited by material things or scarcity of those things. we realize that for us to deal effectively with these social ills and moral decay, we need to first look at the causes of those moral decay and social ills. We highlighted three major ones, which one is poverty, where people do not have land to plow and farm, because without land you cannot actually be able to have food on the table without employment. That is why we think that it is important for government to look at giving the land to the churches, so that the churches can be able to do its own part in terms of plowing and farming to feed the families of those who do not have something to eat, which belong to the churches. Of course, unemployment, as the previous speakers have said, is also part of the causes of moral decay and social ills, because one, if is not employed, is loitering in the township, obviously will engage in these social ills and will end up in this moral malpractice. Government enabling laws. Our government is also fueling, according to our view, is also fueling and enabling this moral decay and social ills. How does government do that? Because when government passes a law on children, that children can abort at 12 years, which I think most of the religious groups that are here do not agree to the abortion of children without parents' consent and at an age of 12 years. I think that most of these religious structures that are here were not properly consulted when this law was passed. At the same time, at school, as the previous speakers alluded, that discontinuation of morning devotions are also part of the things that are fueling moral decay and social ills from the school point of view. So government needs to look at its own justice system that deals with the rights of people who have been involved in criminal activities. We think that government is not doing or is not harsh enough to deal with the criminal activities in our society. That is why moral decay and social ills are so much in such an extent at this moment in our communities. Obviously, exposure to technology and social media is a contributor to the moral decay. The benefits of having churches as a government. Church builds homes and marriages. When we say build homes, we do not mean literally construction of a home, but we mean that from a church point of view, or from the counseling that you get from a church, you are able to have a peaceful, a home that is governed by peace and harmony. And churches also contribute in building or counseling marriages, strengthening marriages. So it helps the government in so doing. Churches restores humanity and good morals. Churches converts criminals to good, well-behaved citizens. Churches encourages fellowship and caring for one another. Churches give special care to orphans, children, and vulnerable elders. Church activities keeps the youth off the streets through music, sports, etc. Churches teaches hope and faith, and thereby reducing the levels of stress and depression to our society. by so doing, reducing the people that will be going to our hospitals and clinics. So churches will definitely need government as a parent to look after the churches, because as I mentioned in the previous slide, that churches are under-resourced, churches do not have land, etc. So government...
Bishop,
yes.
I see your slide, you're talking to it alone. That's the difficulty. Can you deal with the summarize the issues?
Yes, I am about to conclude, Madam Chair. I am about
to summarize the issues in response to our questions. Then we'll get your presentation. But the way you are going now to tell us the role of church, we all know the role of the church. So that's why we're sitting here.
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. I am about to conclude. Madam Chair, most importantly, as churches, we want to partner with the government. We want to work with the government. We need government support as much as government needs us as churches to be able to run the society and the communities. Churches are major role players in the society, and we cannot run away from that. And most of the people that you would go out to campaign to are people from the churches. So churches are part of your voters that have elected the government that is standing. So we would really love to see the government acknowledging and also all the faiths at the same time supporting all the faiths. Today I am glad to realize that from the presentations that were given and the explanations, that it was clear that SACC does not represent the whole religious sector and not the sector mouthpiece. And therefore, all other council of churches that are here and other religious structures that are here needs cognition besides the SACC. Madam Chair, I thank you.
That last statement, I don't think it belongs here, but you are free to express your opinion, because nothing bars you from organizing yourself like the SACC, like any other organization. We are only left with two presentations. Dr. Simikoti will be the last one. I called you out, but then let me give you a reference. I have strictly 5 minutes. I've got reasons why I'm doing that. No presentation, just sum up the issues. Then we will deal with Dr. Simikoti, and then we have discussions and wrap up the day. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, having looked at the 5 questions that were posed, I will confine myself mainly to question 2 to 5. As against addressing each question individually, my summation will take all of them together. Madam Chair, our starting point could be of itself a bit of an issue, in the sense that we seem to be operating from a belief that we all have a similar understanding of what we are talking about. For instance, we're talking here about harmful religious practices, and we have not really broken down what harmful religious practices is. From what I've heard here, none of it seems to speak to what the Department of Justice spoke to in as far as harmful religious practices, particularly the director, sometime last year, I do believe it was, in talking about harmful religious practices, that is the director of Justice in Child Affairs. mentioned things like vampirism, spiritual intimidation, voodoo, coercion, and those kind of things. And here we're talking about individual manifestations of what some creature men have done. So I think it's necessary to get that understanding in place. And at the same time, Madam Chair, we hear the recommendation by the CRL as regards a strong regulation of the sector. Madam Chair, again, there is no universal understanding of what we are talking about when we're talking regulation. Because here, as far as I am concerned, as against talking about regulation, what we should be looking at is the professionalization of the sector, meaning that each manifestation, I'll talk mainly to Christianity because that's the area that I think I understand better than the other religious manifestations, as against trying to understand how to regulate the conduct of pastors, as indeed you cannot regulate the faith, we should be addressing ourselves to how we make the ministry a respectable profession and allow the profession to therefore come up with its own standards. Just like you have the medical profession, it has its own body, the legal profession, the accountants, and all these people, they have their own respected standards of what it means to be a professional within that particular sector. So we need to be looking at now, how do we professionalize the space within religion as well? For those who want to be theologians, they're already covered because universities have got degrees in theology and that kind of stuff, and SACWA already recognizes that. So the question now becomes, to those who have a call and do not have necessarily that academic acumen which therefore enables them to be theologians, what do we do with them? This is when now we need to be thinking in a more innovative manner. And in so thinking, we look at a scenario where I can start a church today, and next thing I have a Bible school. The next person starts their own church, the next thing they have their own Bible school. How do we synchronize the teachings of these Bible schools in such a manner that there is an element of uniformity and understanding as to what it is that we are teaching, as to what it is that we are giving to the people? How do we align the spiritual element of what the gospel is about to the physical needs of the people? Because the mistake that I am seeing that we are running ourselves into is a situation where we are basically facing what Jeremiah 17 verse 5 warns against. Where the Bible says, cursed be the man who trusteth in men and maketh his flesh, the flesh his arm, and departeth from God. And unfortunately, the more we look at structuring the regulation from the mind of man, the more we are going to mess up what is already messed up. And what is to be done, Mama, like I'm saying, is to professionalize this particular space. Because now we have a scenario where I only know of one person through the media who has made the members of the congregation eat grass. I only know of one person who has used doom. I only know of one person who purportedly raised someone from the dead. So we can't, because of individuals who do their little things in the corner, now penalize the entire sector. So the most important thing is to see how... I beg your pardon, ma'am.
2 seconds.
Thank you. The most important thing now is to see how the councils that are here and representing the different sectors, how can they come together and come up with some curriculum of sorts which will be acceptable and therefore give professionality to the industry? Thank you very much.
Very simple. Put them in pen and paper, né? And send them to us.
I will do that, ma'am.
Thank you so much. The last presentation for the day is Dr. Simi Koti, Act Resolution Summit. Before that,
Madam Chair, we find very useful the presentations, but we're not sure where we are on the agenda. Because we just hear the names of the people, not what they represent.
Okay. Reverend, the last speaker, Reverend Isabel Osvalda, is part of the Pentecostal and Charismatic Church from Revival Pentecostal Church. It's an independent church. The previous speaker before him, it was Bishop Musa, I can't pronounce his surname, X-I-N-C-W-A, Bishop Mumulara, you can tell me how that is that. I come from the other post, from Zimbabwe South. Then, is the 12 Apostle Church in Christ. So I'll learn how to pronounce from my Honorable ATM President on this other thing. Yeah, so those are the presidents. And I always requested that whenever you speak, introduce yourself. So Reverend Smanda, you didn't do that. So that's why there are problems. But we are done now. It's only wanted to fill up the gaps. Remember earlier as I started, those that first, they want to make impulse, they must whisper. It's the one that I'm dealing with. The last one is Dr. Simi Koti for the day, because we're also covering, we had planned that we're going to attend at 5, and I think we are within time. Safe to say that post that Dr. Simi Koti, then we can then have discussions, then we wrap up for the day. Are you ready? You missed your chance when you were outside. You could have done this long ago, ne? So you are the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sure.
I'm Simi Koti from the Anti-Regulation of Religion Summit, and I'll tell you a bit about it. I'm with Archbishop Shimon Malefane, and what we do is we... So we have signatories to our organization in seven provinces, except the Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. And the Anti-Regulation of Religion Summit started raising our voice in 2015 at the beginning of the CRL Rights Commission's investigations. We tried to petition Parliament then, because basically we were and we still were of the opinion that a lot of what they've come up with was outside the constitutional mandate. If anybody understands the concept of quality assurance, you know that a flawed process would never bring about a product more perfect than it is. And if you look basically into what has brought us this far, there was a German professor, Professor Hegel, and he tried to explain a political manipulation strategy that has since been known as the Hegelian dialectic, where a principal has a solution in mind. They have an agenda to fulfill, and what they do is they create a problem around that agenda because it's going to lead to public outcry, and they present as a solution their original intent. When you look at the modus operandi of the Civil Rights Commission, and you look at the investigations they embarked upon, and you look at the recommendations they came with, it's very obvious that at the beginning of the process, their minds were made up that religion has to be regulated. And in the process, they overlooked a lot. So basically, that's where we come from, and our solutions are based around that. A fact that we cannot ignore in this room is, if Jesus Christ, if his teachings, if his practices, and his apostles were operating in South Africa today, they'll be completely branded outlaws. Nobody can deny that. Because basically they came in with a religious thinking that was going to dominate in the time they lived in. Instead of operating in a way that was completely tangent to the established way. And but that has not ended there. If you look at some of the presently big denominations in South Africa now, that's exactly how they started. Nobody holds the authority to define what is religiously conventional. You know, no one in this room, no one in the whole of South Africa has the authority to determine what is conventional and non-conventional. Now, and what is unfortunate is, I agree with Professor Sauer there, that we're using a lot of terminology we don't have common understanding around. For an example, Chair, the use of foreign churches. We have a very Eurocentric definition of foreign churches. Where I sit as an African Christian and believer now, when you talk foreign church, I'm thinking Roman Catholic, Methodist, Anglican, Presbyterian. But somebody across the aisle is thinking Nigerian, Ghanaian. And that's a very xenophobic definition. If South Africa has a problem with foreign churches, let's start checking the foreign churches that came here centuries back, not our fellow Christian African brothers who crossed in the last 5 years or so. That's where part of the problem is. And unfortunately, that's the kind of understanding and definition the Seattle Rights Commission brought into the discussion. To the extent that today, through the use of media, when somebody thinks foreign churches, we think about the Nigerian guy. But by whose definition is the Nigerian guy foreign? That's a part of the problem, and that's where the solution comes from. Because if we don't clearly define our terminology and we don't have a common understanding of what the problem is, then the solution are somehow misguided and superfluous to some extent. Now, another issue that should be looked into where the solution is the stereotyping. Now, stereotyping is attributing the characteristic of an individual to a group you think they represent. Now, there's a lot of stereotyping in the Civil Rights Commission's report and in the thinking that because they have access to the media. Every time there's an incident that they redefine, the media runs with it. Now, stereotyping is, rape is rape, despite the location of the crime. Now, you can't tell me that rape is serious if it happens in a church, because it's no less serious if it happens in a nightclub. Rape is rape. Now, especially when you consider the issue of 78% of the South African population claim to be Christian. From the 57 million we have, almost 45 million are Christian. So that itself tells that almost every crime, the probability of a crime being committed by a so-called Christian is higher than any other group. Now, when a man makes you eat grass, is the eating of the grass illegal or is the eating of the grass at church illegal? When is the eating of grass illegal? And that's what makes the report that was generated by the CLS Commission very problematic. Now, somebody making people eat dog meat at church, if they are criminally liable, so should the Chinese by eating meat, dog food in the house. When is dog meat illegal? In people's homes or in churches? If we don't ask those questions, we are going to offer solutions to a flawed process. The Civil Rights Commission process was flawed from the very beginning. They started venturing out into investigating the commercialization of religion. And in the opinion, a false prophet, which a secular state cannot define. To define or to tell apart a false prophet from a true prophet, you must be a believer of the Bible. And you must be a believer in Christ. Because the Constitution can never empower you to tell, let alone a false from a true prophet. The Constitution can even empower you to tell a preacher from a taxi driver, except that both of them are hardly. Now, when... But these are the facts that if we don't consider, we are offering solutions to a problem that has not been established. Have we ever studied that there is anything wrong with religion? What is religion? You know, and the problem is, they have come up. If you say to me, religion is commercialized, and you are an organ of state, the first question you ask is, what is wrong with commercializing religion? Which book are you going to use to tell me what is wrong with commercializing religion? I'll never go to those churches where I need 7,000 to talk to the preacher. But if someone talks out their 7,000 to talk to the preacher, but someone takes the 7,000 to talk to a tavern owner, how are they breaking the law? Am I a criminal because I took 7,000 from someone who believes what I believe in? But I'm not a criminal because I took 7,000 from someone who buys the alcohol I sell. Those are some of the problems that we have now. Now, when they set out to talk about the commercialization of religion, we asked the question back then. You are concerned about a man who charges people 5,000 to come into his venue, yet you're not concerned about the commercialization of religion in that every South African from every walk of life is forking out money for halal food. That's commercialization of religion, because halal is a religious concept. And every, now, what makes the so-called false prophet less criminal than the Islamic Judicial Council is, at least I'm giving 7,000 to someone who preaches what I believe in. But with halal, I'm forking it out into a belief system I don't even subscribe to. And from a biblical context, when we hear how they prepare halal and what makes it halal, it's an offense to my belief. Because you are putting on oatmeal, you are putting on carrots from Woolworths, you are putting on oranges from Pick and Pay, a stem that basically has gone through a ritual that violates my belief. Those are some of the issues. If you don't tackle head on, we're going to be in trouble. Now, what about church? Who defines church? It's so unfortunate that a lot of preachers, even some sitting here, they've allowed a secular state to define what church is. The only definition of church is formed from the lips of Christ, where two or three are gathered in my name. Now, it does not say when, where two or three gather. We meet at Mug and Bean in his name, that church. So you are saying to me, for me to share my faith with the other two, I need to be certified by a university. I don't need qualification to be a preacher, because preaching is not a profession, it's my personal philosophy. Now, we have allowed the state to define what church is, and since we are running with the state's definition of church, not the biblical definition, we have found something wrong with religion. Now, another thing that has to be defined and that has not come through is case for change. Anybody in politics and anybody in business knows that if it's not broken, don't fix it. And if you're going to fix it, you must establish enough case for change. Now, we are asking now, while we are running ahead and talking about alternative solutions, some of us are still asking, by the way, what is wrong with religion? I'm not convinced there's anything wrong with religion, because from 45 million people, you have found 10 people who rape and step over people and who do all sorts of things. In a nutshell, Chair, that would be our problem. And we have some solutions. Our report is there at the back, in the anti-regulation of religion. You can engage us. But I don't want to take any more time. Our report is at the back. Thank you.
Can I? We were ending on a very high note, but we need to interact like we've done with the earlier presentations. I think we need to interact with all the presentations, starting from the South African Charter of Religious Rights and Freedom, International Institute for Religious Freedom, COC, the Pentecostal and Charismatic Churches, the presentation by Bishop Musai, Bishop Reverend Sabela Zwanda, including the last one by Dr. Simi Kotu on the anti-regulation summit. I'm at your mercy now, 5 o'clock. Let me see, maybe from the part of members first. Then the other groupings will come now. I want us now to have an interactive discussion. Question for clarity or comment from members? It's only you, Honorable Zungula. Then I'll throw it back to the house. Dr. Simi, can you switch off that mic, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think we need to appreciate the fact that within a year of the of this sixth parliament, this committee has requested this kind of a dialogue. However, I would like to perhaps ask the participants on what they propose going forward, so that it's not a matter of when the COCTA committee wishes, but maybe it could be something that is continual, so that whatever that is agreed upon today, when it does not happen in the next year, there's a time whereby the committee can account or the participants in the religious sector can also account. I think some of the questions that we ask are relating more to the churches, to say, what have you done about the issues of moral regeneration and so forth. But I wanted to ask maybe from the organization, what do you think is a failure from the side either of parliament or government? Because we're looking at maybe the issue from a one side, that you as churches regulate one another and do all of those things. And I'm trying to think of a case of Pastor Mbuni from Pretoria. If Utatu Mpumlwana went to him and Pastor Mbuni said, but I don't account to you, you don't have authority over me, then what recourse does he have? Then he comes here 6 months later, the committee is asking, but what have you done? Meaning there's an issue of, we are asking people who have not given authority over religious sectors questions that require them to have authority over the other religious sector people. Then the last one, I think it is a matter of trying to check also from the formulation of the CRL as well as other legislation that we have from time to time. Because we hear a lot of speakers are saying we do not want our children to be taught sex at a very young age. I think that is a sentiment. But even though the religious sector is spoken, but you find that the Department of Education will continue doing it. Meaning we're going to have a challenge whereby we ask the religious sectors to comment, and they do comment, they express themselves, but the side of the government and the parliament, they do not act as per the advice. And later on, the very same parliament will come back to the people, to the religious sector, and say, what have you done? So my last question is in a matter of the CRL commission, your happiness around it, so that we do not sometimes accept something, we condone something that from the very onset we said there's no reason for it to exist, or its mandate, there's no reason for it to do a particular issue. So those were the few concerns or questions from my side. Thank you.
Okay, you've heard the members, Bishop Pumulana, Bishop Matole, my Archbishop is still there, Bishop Govinda, and also SARF. That question is cast across. Everybody is free to respond to those issues as raised. But also, while we are there as well, Honorable Zungula, we, as I indicated earlier, we were to adopt the legacy report from the previous parliament, and nothing compared us to prioritize this, because there are other priorities, you know, the portfolio is huge. But we realized to say our past experience, the focus has been on the municipalities, traditional authorities, not to focus also on the work of the commission, the issue of religion. Hence, we felt this is the matter that we need to list. But from where we come from, because people are very quick to put the blame on Parliament, like, I've been indulged with question to say, since Parliament adopted the CRL report, what have we done as a committee? then, but you know how we operate in the other priorities. The same thing, I'll raise the issue of funding now of this forum, which I also need to appreciate, despite, you know, I had to stop them because there's no funding, but I said, within the limited resources, let's see if we cannot have a dialogue. I'm raising this because since the adoption of the report, majority of you, it might be some few people who had contention. This report of the CRN was processed by Parliament, and Parliament expressed a view on what needs to be done. You were all fighting for self-regulation, and this is what Parliament adopted in 2018. But the way I'm sitting here, none of you who have been propagating that can give me a progress report, with the exception, of course, Prof, because you were able also to give me a copy of the charter to say this is the progress that we have made. So what I'm trying to raise here, Bishop Govinda, it's good to fight that the Commission said regulation, but then Parliament resolved that issue of self-regulation is the route that should be focused. But where is the progress report that you say, as this forum, this post the 2018 resolution of Parliament, this is what we have done towards self-regulation. I hear you, Archbishop, but I mean for the others, you know what I'm trying to say. Because, like I said earlier, we are saying we are having this dialogue so that we find solutions. Solutions won't come from anywhere. It's amongst ourselves here that we need to come up with solutions. So I'm trying to raise this so that, based on the issue that you have raised, Honorable Zumula, on our part, definitely we are going to continue to engage with this sector. Like I said in my opening remarks, whenever we do oversight in the provinces, because at times it's not feasible to bring all of you here, we'll have that aspect of us interacting with the religious community there. Also to check based on whatever we are going. Some have gone very clean here to say these are the proposals. They are very clear out of our engagement. There are people like the colleagues, the professors, they are very clear to say this is what needs to happen. Also with the South African Council of Churches, even all of you also you put recommendations. Like you indicated then, also we have seen also the need to also involve other stakeholders. Like the next time when we meet, I think we need to call this up, the NPA, the law enforcement agencies, to say to them, this has been the ills that has been happening, the breach of the criminal justice system. These are elements of criminal, apart from few cases that have been reported, there are those that are not even pursued. What have you been doing for those that are advocating the issue that let's allow the law enforcement agencies? But also we've got a responsibility to make the life of the law enforcement agencies simple, to make so as the custodian of the profession, like what Reverend Savela has said, to say let's professionalize this. Let's not pick pocket cases like you have indicated that you can highlight. Let's professionalize. We all agree that there has to be professionalism. And when you professionalize, there has to be basic qualification, unlike that 2,000 degrees that you bought. There must be a sweatshirt program that everybody, whether I'm an independent church, whether we belong to a particular group, it's easier for those that belong to a mainstream church, but let's then deal with the issue of the code of conduct. I'm raising this so that, as you respond to what Honorable Zungula has said, because I said earlier, we want to develop a plan of action. So, this meeting, you might underestimate it, Dr. Shimi, the issue that you are raising, because whether that report, it was adopted by Parliament, it's a report. Now, whether it was flawed, whatever, that's the point that I'm trying to say. There was a process. I believe the committee also called you to come and participate then, such that the report was finally, it's in the records of Parliament, this report. So it's there. So I think what we can do is to extrapolate on what is Parliament resolved, to say how do we then, with all those shortcomings that you picked up, Dr. Shimi, how do we make sure that now we continue, this will be our living document, our reference point as we move forward, to make sure that resolution of Parliament is realized. So that's the point one wants to raise here. Because at the end of the day, tomorrow, Reverend Cecil, we must be able to say these are the things that we are going to do. Like you have indicated, we'll review them quarterly, check the progress, and then come with a clear program of action. But it can't be the committee agenda alone. All of us have got a part to play, because I have a problem of people who come here and say things are not done and don't come with solutions. Propose way forward, how best, because we can only do it together. If it's a collective responsibility, and then we are agreeing, I think the bottom line, all of us were agreeing, our society as it's evolving is going the other direction. We are not creating a better future for generations that are coming. Unless we stop with us and we start to teach our society to behave a particular way that God would have loved us to live. You know what I'm trying to say? So basically, those are the issues that we want to raise. But I think we have managed to assemble brains here, a team, a very big team. And especially the more we have different views, the better. So that at the end of the day, we'll have to be able to come with something tangible that will take us forward as a nation. So let me see the hands that want to respond as we are going to wrap. Whatever you say, also propose a way forward that will help the team to strive. So let me see show of hands. We are trying to propose the way forward. Where were you when I said members, Mato? But you will propose a way forward, I will allow you. Can I see the hand so that I will be able to decide? Whoever wants to speak on the matter before we close, let them high so that I see. How many are you? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Archbishop, it's you there.
Yes.
Eight. We'll start with you, and then Bishop Matole, you are here. You've never spoken, but I'm saying you are here. You tell us what your name. Now they are raising. As I'm talking, can we show it for the last time so that I know this? Archbishop, you are number one.
Thank you.
Ne?
Yes.
Number two, you. I didn't skip any hand, ne? Three. Three this side. Four. Take the number, ne? 5, 6. You're confusing me now. I said 4, 5, 6. There are two hands here. Dr. Matole, is your hand down now? 7. It's you now. You're number 7, Dr. Matole. 8. Dr. Shimi. 9. Reverend Swanda Day. Is what? 10. Is there anyone I omitted? You have a number, all of you. Why do you want to be the last looker? 11. Let's start. Comment. Can I give guidance? You comment, also propose what needs to be done so that the capturing team must be able to put this thing for the day.
Honorable Chairman, I have come with a solution. Good afternoon once more again, beloved brethren. I have this copy that the Honorable Chairman have it. I was part of it. I made a contribution to CRN. I appear before Parliament with my members. I have 8 bishops, president of federations that are registered. They came here in Parliament. Honorable Chairperson, some of the members were not there at the Parliament when the Parliament made a decision that we don't want CRL to make a proposal on behalf of the church for regulations. They agreed for some regulations, but let the church go out and organize for some regulations. As I stand here, on behalf, even though the organization that started didn't give a mandate. I stand on SOSIC because my members are part of it. We then sit with the chairperson of CRL and myself and Bishop Mpumulana and other ministers of religion. We had a meeting at Rema Church after the go-ahead from Parliament. We then discussed way forward to have a national consultative forum, that we need to go and consult other churches, interfaith, the whole out country. Then we then come out with the agenda, letters of invitation were sent out throughout countries, newspapers, radios, and so on. And we invited a lot of members, even my beloved Dr. Sinchi Koti was part of it. And then they were there at Rema Church. And then we then gave them a report of resolution from Parliament. And Sosik nominated Ray McCauley as a convener of all the religious leaders, But we then said we need more time to consult all Hindus, Muslims, Jewish, in all provinces, that we should have the structures in the provinces at the national. We discussed it about the issue of finances. Where will we get finances to go around road shows throughout the countries? Well, we then had at the second meeting, we could not have the date. We had a date for a national consultative conference, but it was postponed because the time factor was not on our side to go to the provinces. Then nothing has been changed, Honorable Chairperson, from self-regulation and the National Consultative Conference. In other words, according to the records, the national religious leaders, I'm part of it, with my 16 members of all provinces, yeah, they are there on the board, at Rema Church. The meeting held on Thursday, I made an apology because I was invited by the Premier of Gauteng and the MEC for the budget. So I made an apology. So we're just waiting for them to arrange another date where everybody will be discussed and so on. I don't know the next agenda. Bishop Mpumulwana is part of it. Bishop Mathole is part of it. And other my members are not here, and other they are not here. So we can't say much about them because they haven't come to an agreement to come and represent in Parliament. But I'm forced to take out my other cap and put the stage straight for resolution, for solution here. That there is a committee that is existing of national religious leaders task team. We appointed Bishop Musa Sono as the chairperson of the task team. We mandated him to go to Soweto to have a consultative with Soweto Minister Petena and other Petenas. I was not invited, but I went there to Soweto.
Bishop, throughout the country,
he has
only consulted Soweto.
Let me clarify. I didn't get a mandate from the religious forum, so I don't have the previous minutes so far, but he went around the country. I don't know where did he went, but the only date that I can justify in front of men and women, that was Soweto at Dube. I was there, and the doctor was there at the CB, yes, in Gota. He once said, I think on the article, there was each other engaged on the media, and then he apologized to Bishop Musa Sono. And then I can witness that I was there. And then he even welcomed, invited him to be part of the national religion. And we already opened to those who were not there when we started that. Let them come on board. The house, the rooms are in my house. There are so many rooms. We will accommodate the doctor and others who wanted to be part of the national religious. So we haven't discussed about the code of conduct. We haven't discussed about the regulations. We only take the mandate that comes from Parliament, that we need to consult each other and organize at the region, at the provinces. We have delegated some other members from all provinces to go and organize in their province. So, Madam Chairperson, on the SOSIC side, we have approached Minister of Arts and Culture. I had several talks with him. He said we should make an application to get the resources for roadshow to invite all the members. At SOSIC, I've spoke to the leadership of Heritage Council. Dr. Matole had an AGM. They were invited. They said, "Men of God, Archbishop, put an application. Don't wait for that national religion. From your organizing, apply and invite everybody so that they must be engaged on the stakeholders forum all throughout South Africa. We cannot wait for people, all these people are doing things here on the radio and the newspaper." So basically, the solution is one. We must go back to the previous update, perhaps maybe Bishop Mpumulana and Bishop Matole. We should go back home and ask the forum to write a letter to your office, to your attention, so that you should get a back update of the report, so that perhaps maybe the leadership can come and make a presentation before you, and then we'll take that forward. But the solution is only national consultative conference, where all everybody that they are sitting here, even other provinces that could not get an opportunity, they should participate there and come out with a policy, with a code of conduct, and then we'll review. We might even review the code of conduct of CRL. But on my side, as a president of South Susi, I support the CRL, what they did. I support the COFTA portfolio. The only scenario that I had a problem, it was only the CRL when they summoned the ministers, and they felt that they were threatened, and so on. But that was the only power that they can exercise to call them, because no one past minister will come when you call them. Because there's no regulation in South Africa. There's no regulation. If you call any member to come to your meeting, they might not come. Unless you summon them, then they will feel that they will go to jail. But that's how they exercise it, because they are using the resources of states. They have to account to those resources that they travel to PE. What have you done? I had a meeting with Shole, with Sosi, and they didn't come. We booked a hotel. It was so many, I turned the register so much. So I gave them the punch. I gave them the punch.
One minute to wrap up, Bishop.
All right.
You've made your point, I know. Now I know where's the snag is.
Yes.
Because since the recent report was adopted in March 2018, we are 2 years later, ne? So
yes.
2020 now. We are in March 2020.
Yes.
Nothing has literally happened.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
Yes.
And then even in those forums that you are referring, I know some are mumbling because they've never been part of those processes of the those.
Yes.
I know, I heard the stories. Some of them went there to disrupt the way it was invited and everybody. But the reality is that we spent 2 years doing nothing.
Millions of dollars.
We are all in agreement. And we are agreeing that something has to happen.
Yes.
The
Thank
next
you.
Speaker, you wanted to close. Let me give you a minute to sum up what you want
May
to
May I close?
Yes.
I'm saying, Dr. Shimi, sir, you are welcome on board. I'm extending my hands to you. You are welcome to attend the national religion. Even if you don't, let me put it my head on the block.
Yes.
Even if those who disagree, it will carry on. It will not stand whether they want or they don't want.
Yes.
There are some people who will disagree and those who agree.
Mm.
Yes, majority agreed.
Okay.
And the document has been documented.
Mm.
The resources, financial resources have been spent.
Mm.
And something must be done. We are going to have the national, we are going to follow the protocol and inform the I'm speaking on behalf of my 27 federation leaders, not the regional leaders.
Point made.
Thank you so much.
Point made. We have noted that. We'll comment on to that. Number two.
Thank you, Chair.
You're not going to be eloquent like the Archbishop. It goes with the titles, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm so school with Kavita. I'm Pastor Richard Kanyile from Gauteng, Deputy Secretary ISAF.
Okay.
Just three suggestions or recommendations,
yes.
But I don't want to repeat what has been said. But we will actually advise this House to regulate religion by the commission or the body that will be comprising of all faith in the country. Two, we have to control foreign nationals that are running churches in the country. So we must allow them to preach, teach the gospel in the country, but actually they should be doing that under the leadership of leaders in the country. Because that will be shenanigan for me to go to Nigeria and become a bishop there. But actually, I can go and preach in Nigeria and submit under the leadership in that country. Three, which is the last, we have to establish strong support on the township economy just to help the economy of the country. Let us all invest, work together to establish a strong township economy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Tom Tamaha, and by the grace of God, I have been pastoring a church here in Khayelitsha for the past 15 years. And prior to that, from the very time I answered the call to serve the Lord was way back in 1992. That is, I've served the Lord for about 28 years now. And
an expert in the industry.
The most bizarre thing I've ever heard is for those of us, and I've actually taken some notes and written them down for the purpose of time. The most bizarre thing I've ever heard, is for those of us professing to be followers of Jesus, calling for the government to regulate the church, instead of calling for the church to put their acts together and self-regulate. We have the word of God with every answer to whatever struggle or question we may be having. I wonder as to whether pastors are actually aware of a case in the Bible, which I would say is a bit similar to what South Africa is encountering today. It's in the book of 1 Corinthians, and I'll read. It was a situation wherein a lawsuit amongst the believers was being addressed. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, from verse 1, it says, if any of you, reading, has a dispute with another, do you dare to take it before the ungodly for judgment instead of before the Lord's people? Or do you not know that the Lord's people will judge the world? And if you are to judge the world, are you not competent to judge tribal cases? Do you not know that we will judge angels? How much more the things of this life? Therefore, if you have disputes about such matters, do you ask for a ruling from those whose way of life is scorned in the church? I say this to your shame, or I say this to shame you. Is it possible that there is nobody among you wise enough to judge a dispute between believers? But instead, one brother takes another to court, or we may rather say to parliament. And this in front of unbelievers. You are the people in parliament that should be looking to the church for answers, not for the pastors and the church to be looking for answers from you. The very fact that you have lawsuit among you means you have been completely defeated already. Is that how far we have become fallen stewardship in this country, and the reason why this country is going through all these challenges we're facing? What has happened to the church? And here is the thing, as a church we are actually supposed to be a government within a government, or a state within a state, but we've allowed ourselves to be government that is opposed to everything that has God in it, when we could have, in the first place, applied the principles of the Word of God, the Bible. There's one beautiful principle here in Exodus 18:21-22. For all those we've nominated to serve in all spheres of leadership, both in the church and government, it says. But select capable men from all the people.
Yeah.
Men who fear God,
amen.
Trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves, that will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. And Romans, again, 16:17-18 says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause division and offenses contrary to the doctrine ye have learned, and avoid them. Mark them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. So this is where we have failed, Madam Speaker, in the first place. And now, as if it is not enough, we now want to subject the Church of God to a government that is already burdened with so many things. Yes, the members of the churches should be subjected to government to a certain degree, but beyond that, let the church lead. And it is very important and necessary that Christians should speak out today and say no to the CRL's proposals for regulation of religion. The CRL's recommendations, if implemented, would violate the constitutional right to religious freedom and freedom of association. The religious sector is already heavily regulated by various laws. And I'm happy to hear that in the next coming meetings, all those state agencies would be invited to participate in meetings such as this so that they can actually account or take responsibility also for the mess that this country is finding itself in.
Yes.
I would specifically point out that contrary to what the report purports to suggest, the proposed regulation of religion is not congruent with the South African Charter for Religious Rights and Freedoms, to which the CRL is obviously a signatory. The regulation of religion stands in conflict to religious people and churches' religious freedom rights, while a peer review that has also been proposed mechanisms would be a good practice to phase out these corrupt preachers who make people eat snakes, doom, etc., but it should not be implemented in the context of legislation. If oversight is the objective, then there are multiple other ways to achieve that objective, by legislating it through regulating religion, the government will create more problems than solutions. We all want responsible religious behavior. So why not develop maybe a system that will involve co-responsibility from all parties? And lastly, as for the pastors, to be compelled, as I've heard one speaker saying, to have qualification, I would rather say that being a pastor is not a profession or a career. It is a calling. The book of Romans chapter 10 verse 15, and I'll quote, "And how can anyone preach unless they are sent?" Unquote. And they can definitely not be sent unless they were called first. And there's a difference between a calling and a career. A career is something you choose. A calling is something you receive. A career is something you do for yourself. A calling is something you do for God. A career promises status, money, or power, or recognition. A calling generally promises difficulty, suffering, and the opportunity to be used by God. A career may end with retirement and loss of toys. A calling is not over until the day you die. A career can be disrupted by any number of events. But when God calls you, He enables you to fulfill your calling, even in the most difficult circumstances. A Bible college will never do that. We have solutions to the questions raised, and I'm sure our constituency, which I represent, and together also with Dr. Shimikutu and FOSA and many other organizations will be presenting tomorrow and also on the 18th. But so to say, I just want to say again, thank you for the opportunity to voice my views based on what I've been doing.
Of Mpumalanga SARS. I'm having a concern here. I'm just going to speak for 2 minutes. When Mercedes-Benz is having a problem, the Mercedes-Benz company takes the Mercedes-Benz back to the manufacturer and say there is a fault with your brakes or there is a fault with your gear. And the manufacturer will make it a point that take or send out message to all people who are driving Mercedes to say there is a fault with your brakes, take all your cars back to the dealer for fixing. According to Apostle Paul, I quote 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19, says, don't you know that you are a temple of God? You, the church is me, the church is you. Before we can extend it to outside people, we are the church individually as we are here. And the church, which is the body, where the Holy Spirit, which is the Spirit of God, dwells in. That one we need to understand. Now the solution to the problem that we are having today, as we are discussing here, is that the manufacturer of creation, who is God? According to Psalm number 127, verses number 1, I quote, except God builds a house, those who build it build in vain. We might be sitting here and wasting energy and time and not involving the mere person who's supposed to fix the problem. God is the creator of every creature. We are the creatures created by God. I am pleading to all organization leaders who are here that we go back to the churches or to people that we are leading and organize according to the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter number 7, verses number 14. The Bible says, if my people, yes, who are called divine name, they come together and pray. Turn away from their wicked ways. Me, God, I will hear and I will answer them and I will heal their land. Prayer is the solution after we have done it all. Nothing will ever reach. Our government will never make it if God is not part of it. Every organization that is here will never make it if God is not part of it. Nothing ever will ever solve any problem that we are encountering in this world unless God is not part of it. If God be with us, He is the solution. Prayer must be organized. If we go back to prayer, solution will be reached. May the God, good Lord, bless you all.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pastor Nongaba Musungutu from Gauteng. Madam Chair, I just want to support all the speakers who have spoken that God is the pillar of everything through prayer in the name of Jesus. That's what I believe in. But I just want to make some few comments that also prayer without works, it's futile. I just wanted to add on to what Umama has said in the morning, talking as though she was admonishing us as religious people. I just want to say and reassure the house that we are working as religious sector. We are working where we come from as pastors. We are working as traditional healers, as traditional leaders, as Rastafarians where I come from, because we work as a collective in housing. And why I'm saying that, there are social ills in our country, and I'm happy that we were involved in the CRL dialogues, you know, we have been part of, and we are very happy that we were contributing. And the social ills that we are facing right now, we have the question of GBV, which we are on it as Gauteng. The question of NHI, it's an issue on its own. We need to discuss it as a religious sector because the health issue affects everyone. If we cannot get our health sector into where it is supposed to be, then our children are going to be doomed. Our future is going to be doomed. And we do go to schools. You know, in schools there's a question of crime, violence, and drugs in schools. We have been to those places. And somebody spoke about social cohesion, compact nation building. This is what we do in Gauteng, where we meet with all the religious sectors. We met that on Sunday at the provincial legislature, and we are meeting on the 14th and 15th. Now, I'm saying we are not meeting because we are pastors. We are meeting because we are community members, we are women, we are men, we belong to our communities, much as we are pastors. But I have a serious problem about the comprehensive sexual education, which I don't know whether Mutatu Zungula who raised the issue of saying, what is the church doing when, with due respect, yourself as parliamentarians make the very laws to say there must be SCE. And unfortunately, fortunately enough, we have been attending the dialogue regarding this, and there were opposing views. But my question is, yourself with the cabinet, are you not working as a collective? Because the minister says this, and yourself says this. And we are expected as the community, as the FGPV, and the pastors, to go to the community and oppose the very laws and the policies that you make. We need a direction from you guys. Because where I come from, I'm a health person. I know how to differentiate between sexual intercourse and sexuality. Here they are talking about comprehensive sexuality education. And when we are attending these meetings, which were called by the minister, some of us were saying they want to teach our children how to masturbate. And it's not true. That is not what they want to do. They explained to us, we were pastors there, we were community members, there were everybody from religious sectors. And some of us, as pastors, we even said to them, we are sorry. We have thought that we are teaching our children sexual intercourse, because somebody decided to take this thing and pervert it to the way he wants it to be. But I'm not saying if we are against the sexuality, the comprehensive sexuality education, we cannot voice it out. But comprehensive sexuality education is not sexual intercourse education. From where I come from, I attended almost 5 of these meetings, even the ones which had the pictures of children literally masturbating. So I am here to say, is it possible for us also, as religious sector, to give direction to the communities? If somebody is not put as they are put as parliamentarians, we must correct it. We must not say it is wrong. Because I will want my granddaughter to know about the milestone as far as the girl child is concerned and the boy child. And that is not sexual intercourse. I thank you.
Number.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the Deputy. Let me first thank you.
I don't know if I can
hear you. I'm the Deputy since he's sitting next to you. Let me first thank you. Well, my name is Reverend Mudu Kamalo from KZN. I'm in charge of what I'm designated to deal with arts and culture, getting to churches, schools, communities, doing this ministry through arts and culture. Coming to what was said today, at least we are getting the opportunity. I won't be too verbose in elaborating what has been said. But there's something common from all speakers of today. I'm also thanking the table of bringing this gathering. There are so important factors. We have harmful religious practices that every second speaker was saying that social ills, moral decay, voluntary, feasible, and practical. I think most of the speakers were revolving around these terms or this technology. But maybe as a religious sector, as a church, or as an interfaith, we don't come out against these things. I mean, we don't have a stand. When these things happen, we want to be reactive. We're not proactive. For instance, I was expecting that I'll listen to some researchers or professors talking about the coronavirus that is killing people, but nothing was said about coronavirus, and which is a South African problem. It's one of the examples that when things happen, we don't take a stand as a church. We just, maybe we're waiting to bury those victims.
Can I share with you on that one, Reverend?
Yes.
The ZCC choir has produced a song on coronavirus. And that's why I ordered the ZCC first time. So there's something very profound.
Okay. Okay. No, thanks. If it's coming up, but just that I didn't hear today, I was hoping. Maybe tomorrow on the second session we'll hear something. Yes, no, thanks. Then the other thing, there is a tendency of saying one and the same thing over and over again. Well, some of these things that have been raised, some of us have raised them, these things 2 years back, three years back, 5 years back, more than that. So we must also avoid becoming a talk shop. Just talk about things that we don't have, don't be practical. Let's have time frames on the things that we are discussing. These are the time frames. this is the reporting back that how far we've gone. So that the next gathering, we must not repeat this and they find that the same scenario of saying these things differently is taking place. Also, let us get other views. Because, I mean, we had a Pentecostal view and a charismatic view on religion, but we did not get an apostolic approach. We do need other approaches. Even the early church, what was happening in the early church. I mean, we must get the holistic approach in dealing with these issues. Also, if we are just one-sided, it will seem as if we are saying things that favor us. Also, let us agree on the conventional approach to define the church. I was happy when speaker was saying, quoting the Bible, when two or more are gathered as a church. Even in at Nando's, become a church when they eat meat, just two of us eating. Even on a tavern, wherever two or more are gathered, they become a church. I was happy to say this. We also define, both in terms of definition, we must also define a religion, cult, and must do a research. I think we need some speakers that will be telling us or addressing us, get deeper what a cult is, what a religion, so that we draw lines. I mean, being an interfaith, I mean, we're in an advantageous position that we must get all aspects of issues. Then, on issues of feasibility against practicality, I think from the questions, there were comments, but we're not sure yet whether this move is feasible. I mean, it's not feasible, but practical or vice versa. But we're not very clear on that from the speaker's point. I was hoping that maybe it will be clarified. Maybe tomorrow on the way forward, we'll be looking at that feasibility against the practicality. Then the code of conduct, let's also have a common code of conduct before the wrongs are committed. I mean, it's good to quote Ramadoso or Bushir, whoever, but those are the wrongs. But we don't have a code of conduct at this house. So let's have a common code of conduct. But that can only happen if we agree to set up a task team for this meeting. We say they must go and draw the code of conduct. They must go and draw the terms of reference. Let us interface. This is how we operate. And also let us avoid being emotional when raising issues. I know some kind of Dr. Vaughan Moya that we can't stop. Who the spirit manage to forget somebody? But somebody who's a high is a banana by hysterical. So must avoid that to be hysterical. Let us put cross points so that everybody understands. So the issue of indigenous churches, because nothing much was said about indigenous churches, because we spoke about foreign churches, but foreign meaning African churches. I'm not sure in terms of our geography if Africa is foreign, if we say African churches are foreign churches. I was also a bit worried from my background that, I mean, when you say you're African, then you say I'm foreign. And the Roman Catholic churches are not foreign from Rome. And the Presbyterian, all these churches, I must be worried. I think we need more clarity, maybe for tomorrow's input. Can that be clarified, which are the foreign churches, which are the African churches? Because, I mean, even in the Bible, they say I'm African, I'm black and beautiful. I mean, I grew up during the Black Consciousness era, and I got my understanding. So that if somebody is saying foreign, I want to know who is foreign. Because we must not have an Afrophobia. But there's a difference between xenophobia and Afrophobia. But I think we have professors here and some academics. They can assist us on that. And if German is not foreign, but Africa is foreign, I have a problem with that. Yeah. Okay. Also. Okay. Okay. Last point. In terms of the inputs, if you can get the emails or the inputs that were given today. But I was remaining with about 9 other points, but due to time, I'm respecting them. Thank you.
9 other points.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just a quick one. I just want to raise issues at two levels as a proposal for a way forward. I think two things, a capable state and a capable church. At the first level, when it comes to a capable state, already we cannot talk about the dispensation of saying churches must not be registered. Churches have been registered. Most of the churches are registered as NGOs, NPCs, and as public benefit organizations. Now, the capable state must do what it's supposed to do in terms of those things when it comes to the protocols of operating within the framework of the Constitution. They must be very, very effective to ensure that all the protocols that have been set according to those registration requirements based on existing laws that are there, they operate as they should. And there has not been adequate proof that there's a state that is capable to ensure that those things are dealt with properly. I think we should start there. We don't have to wait for a meeting somewhere else. People are officials. People have registered organizations. They've got database. They know how to communicate with us. They see whether we submit our financials. They see whether we operate according to what we have agreed to operate upon, because most of our constitutions are meeting the requirements that are there. So there's no debate about that. So I think let's not have excuses going forward to say nothing has been done 2 years later. The laws have been there. If there's a capable state, we need to make sure that the capable state does not need us to do what it's supposed to do. Let me come back, for a lack of a better word, I would use it, the concept of a capable church, the same way, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Now, I think we as a sector, we have expressed our views in terms of where we are. We are not a homogeneous sector, to be saying one size fits all. But there are things that are key that are very, very important that we have put across to say every religious body, whether formal or informal, they must have their own guidelines in how they operate and communicate it and say, if somebody, this is our liturgy, this is how we do our things, this is our order of governance, this is how we do things. If anybody says they are associated with us, this is how you must treat them. This is how we authenticate them. Speak to us about that. If they go outside of that, we are capable enough to deal with that. And we must show commitment and integrity to deal with that consistently. And we don't need a special law, because already we are a structure that is registered, that is already functioning. The only thing is that we must do what we are supposed to be doing. Now, I think that those are the key things. Then this will cut across, because even when we say professionalization, we don't look at ministries the same way doctors become doctors, lawyers become lawyers, engineers become engineers. It's a different sector with different sets of a criteria when it comes to how we look at scripture and say somebody becomes a minister of the gospel. And those things are there. There's people who don't go through preparation of ministry in a way that is academic, according to the generally academic standards. You can't impose that standard on them. You must respect their tradition, you must respect their order. But the same people are within our structures, are within our relationships, are within our associations. Because as different religions, we interact. We interact. And I think it's an indictment in a sense that the people we are talking about are not the people who went to the CRL Commission to make presentation, are not the people who are here. We who are taking care of ensuring that we stay within the protocols of our registration, we have internal processes to ensure that the gospel is not placed in disrepute. We are the one who are standing before the commission. And we are the ones who are supposed to be imposed with additional laws that are going to be too burdensome when it comes to issues of accountability. There are certain values that are standard that cut across our moral conduct, code of conduct, and our guidelines. We all purport integrity. We all purport lawfulness. We all purport accountability. We all purport good governance. But good governance within the traditions and the theologies that we hold. I think that's how I want to explain it, that we need both a capable state, which has already existing laws to function properly. We've got churches that have codes of conduct, procedures and guidelines. Others, maybe they have not codified them in a way that people would understand them. But we have strengths within the religious structure. We can sit down and say, how do we sit down and help you to put your guidelines in a way that are within your oral tradition? So that when people communicate with you, they don't misunderstand who you are. They understand who you are. And in that way, as a church, we become a church that is responsible.
To the Honourable Speaker, Chairperson, I greet all of you. I am Reverend Ashley LeBaron from the Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth, South. However, I also want to just highlight that I also speak because there's a fraternity in my area on which I serve. And as a worker in a community, you know, I'm grateful to be here today. With my minimal intellectual capacity, the audience here has opened up my eyes to a lot of issues that affect the religious sector. A few respondents have already addressed my comment, but I just want to add, I would like the CRL to communicate with the municipality's religious desk and allow them to go out to the communities and report on what has been taking place in terms of the report that has been put together from the commission. We need to identify those individual churches that doesn't know about the work that you are currently doing. I mean, to me, when I saw the report for the first time and I saw the submissions today, I am fortunate. Imagine how many thousands of people are out there that is not so fortunate. So I agree that we need to go out and mobilize. In terms of regulation, I've noticed that when we touch on the issue of regulation, we tend to look from it from a spiritual point of view. But as religious organizations, we are subjected to a legislative framework that talks more about the organizational operations, you know, of churches. When we are going to look at regulation, let us look from an organizational perspective. I mean, I am in touch with a lot of churches when there are people working for them. But when you look at those people, they don't even earn a living, but the churches are making enough money to pay them a salary. Many of these organizations are operating from buildings where they are totally contravening the Occupational Health and Safety Act. You can look at various other legislation that have an effect on a church. So really, regulation is important, but not regulation in terms of our spiritual beliefs, because you cannot regulate the spirit. But from an organizational perspective, I think it will do us good to regulate this sector so that we can improve on accountability. Because really, in other areas, reporting to the Department of Social Development, you'll find that they are already complaining that organizations doesn't do that. Now, some of us are fortunate, you know, to have the knowledge on doing that, but a lot of us need guidance. So my proposal would really be that we establish the Religious and Cultural Linguistic Regulatory Council. You know, I propose that we really put together a working committee, representatives from the organizations that are sitting here, to come up with a discussion document, how we're going to put together a regulatory policy for the sector. We also need to define the term religion.
We also need to define religious practices. We need to look at the powers of churches. We need to look at the legal environment. And on the issue of skills relevant to the practices of ministerial work, you know, we need to have a skills audit or a skills portfolio to say this is the skill that we need. We might be ministers doing spiritual work, but we are also managers that are managing the affairs of an organization from an executive point of view. Some of us as directors. So we are also in that area accountable to certain legislation. So yes, that is my proposal for a way forward.
Thanks, Chair. Where we sit, we should take cognizance of the following one. This committee has already rejected the Civil Rights Commission's recommendation. That report was rejected by this committee. This committee found it unworkable, unnecessary, and unconstitutional. So that is an established fact. That's what it says, yeah.
No.
It said, and then the committee said, the fifth parliament, the committee said.
It didn't reject the old report.
Yeah.
It
but
expressed the report.
Yeah. And the committee then said, go back. If you look at the report, let's review the report. It says, go back to the religious sector, and then let the religious sector come up with a voluntary, really, it's true, a code of conduct. Okay? Now, a lot of religious bodies like ourselves ran with those recommendations. And where we are way beyond formulating a code of conduct, because we took the existing religious charter and adopted it. So in our minds, it sets us back when people are still calling for regulation of religion, because we thought today's deliberations were solely on investigating harmful religious practices. Now, we thought the only item on the agenda now was harmful religious practices. Now, that's why it puts us off. Two, where we sit, part of what we cannot understand is the whole insistence on the interface. Okay, we are put up by the fact that the whole insistence on the interface presiding over a process of a philosophical or religious nature. On a very superficial level, someone can see interfaith as a unity of religions. But on a deeply philosophical basis, interfaith is the birth of a new religion, because none of the Christians in the interfaith, none of the Hindus in the interfaith, none of the Muslims in the interfaith can use their holy scriptures to sustain a philosophical unity of all those religions. Now, when you say an interfaith, like has been suggested here, an interfaith committee should preside over a process that would qualify a Christian preacher. What are you saying to me? I can't sit there as a preacher and have a Rastafarian, a Hindu, and a Muslim, and a traditional leader decide if I'm a good preacher or not. Because we differ very drastically on a philosophical level. Three, we cannot support a where we sit there, we treat with suspicion any suggestion that the state, in its present condition, should play an oversight role over the affairs of the church. There is not a single sustainable state-owned entity in South Africa now. SAA, everybody is collapsing. Everybody under the custodianship of the state is collapsing. And the church is saying the church is safe with the state. The state can't properly administrate the affairs of state-owned entities. And you're saying the state should take over the responsibility of spiritual oversight over a church. Nobody in the right mind would even suggest that.
Go, if you don't believe what I'm saying, walk into your local hospital. That's a state institution. Now, number four, the other problem is, we cannot change the mandate of the church into a law enforcement agency. Now, we ask a very simple question. Pre-regulation of religion, when a pastor rapes a girl in the church, how do we deal with that? We call SAPS. Now, we ask a question. After we have regulated religion, how are we going to deal with rape in the church? We'll call the SAPS, unless you are changing the church into a law enforcer. Unless you are trying to say there is no discrimination in terms of definition between crime and sin. You are asking the church to preside over a criminal matter. Because we must define them. Not every crime is sin. And not every sin is crime. Abortion is sin where the church sits. But it's not crime where the state sits. Now, when you try to use the church as an organ of enforcement, you are redefining that. We're no longer taking instructions from the Bible and Christ. We're taking instructions from the state. Calls here for the state to take over and the state to okay this, to rubber stamp them, is misguided. Unless you are looking at a situation in South Africa where there will be Christian Sharia law, where we legislate against them, you have to keep the state and the church separate. The other thing is, it's ironic, Pastor Joshua, okay, Joshua is a bad name for this discussion, Pastor Pete lives in Protea South informal settlement. He sleeps, he eats, he drinks in a shack. On Sunday, you tell him that the building he lives in, he does not comply. Does the shack comply? We have to understand those issues, Chair, and I plead. If we overlook those issues in a hurry to seek a solution, we have not even identified the real problem. I live in an informal settlement. Now, the state goes past every day, my shack is there, I paint it, I put newspapers on the wall. And now you tell me that I can't meet under a tent because some elements within local government who are pro-regulation have committed to clamp down on informal churches. That's victimization. If you're concerned about my safety, fix where I live and sleep and eat with my children, not where I pray for 2 hours. Number four, where any preacher of the Bible, any believer in the Bible sits, the advent of false prophet was prophesied. We are not shocked that there are false prophets. Because Jesus told them the false prophet shall be. We were supposed to have educated the state that, no, look, Jesus told us these things would happen. Now, what are you going to do? Are we clamping down on false prophets from a criminal or from a philosophical point of view? That call is misguided because, again, as we did with the definition of what church is, we have gone to the state to define to us who is false and who is real. My suggestion is very simple. From the very beginning, the Civil Rights Commission assumed roles it had no business meddling with. If you look at that report, they became the complainant. They became the investigator. They became the prosecutor and the judge. Now, draw other state, relevant state institutions to our next discussion. Like Dr. Matoli said, the issue of the capable state. South Africa does not have a religious misconduct problem. It has a law enforcement problem. Established organs of state are not doing what they're supposed to do. If there are human rights violations, the Civil Rights Commission is not the correct institution to deal with that. We have the South African Human Rights Commission. If there are equality issues, we are supposed to have had a very comprehensive and a very inclusive approach to this whole problem. Our solution is one and only. Let us call all the relevant organs of state so that we address the concern the Fifth Parliament had with this report that it was unworkable and unnecessary and unconstitutional. Because in the process of trying to bring order, we should have the understanding of a mathematician. We start with what is known. What is known? The constitution. What is known? There's already a constitutional court ruling on any bizarre, unconventional, and unusual religious practice. And the constitutional court, the apex court in the land, has already said, if nothing harmful, nothing criminal or legal is taking place, let them be. The Prince case, other lawyers said it was a criminal because he smoked dagga. Until it took them at the Rastafarian. If you don't have that approach, if you don't bring all relevant state institutions in the same room, we'll never have a solution. Thank you.
Number 10.
Can you do that for you, Reverend Ivan? On the issue of the report of the commission, it would be wrong if you were to leave the this narrative to say the report was rejected by Parliament.
The recommendation, not the report, Chair.
Even the recommendations, it's not, they didn't reject all the recommendations. Save to the same one to say, they noted that there's a need for the religion to self-regulate. There are others that we adopted, and they are, if you are to read that. I've read that thoroughly in our meeting with Warren FA the other time. I was in just a city. I was trying to Google if the system is down because of the load shedding. Yeah. So, the who's holding that? Is it you, Prophet?
No, it's me.
Can you read or bring it to me? Let me Google it. Read it to the, for the record. No. I wanted the report of Parliament. The resolution is on the 9. It's not that much. The resolution is there. No. I wanted the recommendation side, not the report. This is the report. Yeah, but it's fine. That's the thing we can trace. This is the meeting. It's the minute of the meeting. Which was recording everybody, what everybody said. That's what you are using. But on the recommendation, I have the transcript. I'll share it with you. I can assure you, I'll share with you. Whoever has got the email, they can get. It's only that to say the committee said, we know that there's a need to self-regulate. But the other recommendations and the report was adopted by the portfolio committee. Further, I'm talking about the Parliament resolution when the matter served before the House. When the matter served before the House, in fact, and then the committee, I'm going to read it, somebody has given it to me. You see, the committee made recommendations to the report and they tabled it to the House. So there were just slight changes. And then that is the recommendation. In fact, yeah, the observation are here. The commission did not do sufficient public participation. That was agreed. But they will tell you the kind of research that they've done. And then they noted the disagreement over the constitutionality of the recommendation. And then that religion should not be commercialized. And then the issue of the CR commission. Then they recommend that we must have a national consultative forum, the one that Archbishop was referring to. And then arising from the NCC, the Parliament directed that there must be a charter for self-regulation and the code of conduct for the sector, and then also to strengthen the mandate of the independent ICASA and other law enforcement bodies. Also the strengthening of the non-profit organization and the income tax to ensure that a registration of religious institution is attended to. So the report was adopted by Parliament, safe to say that they had to put those additional recommendations. So basically that's it. And then I'm glad that it's holding the document on the one that served before Parliament, but it's for another day. So here the agenda as I was saying earlier, the process of self-regulation. That's what, when I was saying, I agree a lot of work has been done, but we want something tangible, a progress report. Because there are instances wherein we know that National Consultative Forum, other members didn't attend. Others were disruptive. It's on record. You know what I'm trying to say. So, but there are those that proceeded. There's those like you, Archbishop, who soldiered on to say we want to get this done. So that I think that issue of the task team to come and give us a progress report will serve us good. Finish up, Reverend Simanda, so that we can move.
Thank you very much. I think I'll start with Honorable Zungula's questions, where he's asking about what we think the failure from government is. One of the basic failures on the part of government is operating in silos. Like we're here today, and we're sitting before this particular portfolio committee, but there are other portfolio committees which basically speak to issues which impact upon the religious sector, and they are doing their own thing. Even on the education thing that you're talking about, that the minister will go and do their own thing, which is independent of this, and however which way the influence or the contributions from here end up not impacting that side. And my thinking would be that the Honorable Chair raised an issue that next time there should be other stakeholders that are invited. I would go as far as to say, as against stakeholders per se, have an interministerial or inter-portfolio committee sort of colloquium with religious leaders, so that all the different committees and ministries that have anything to do with this particular sector sit together and have this sort of dialogue and have a structure as to how to proceed from there. That way it prevents the religious sector having to deal today with this one, the next day with the next one, the next day with the next one. Everything is just addressed under one particular umbrella and everything goes forward. And may I just clarify as well on the issue of professionalization. Having a call is not a substitute of learning. And it's not a substitute of operating a church or any other entity in a professional manner. It's just like even the people selling tomatoes or oranges or bananas on the side of the road. There is nothing that stops them from operating in a professional manner. That is professionalization. So it's important to understand that a career and operating professionally are worlds apart. Professionalization in this sense talks about an action or a process of giving professional conduct to a particular sector. And that is what we should be working towards. That's why I differentiated between those who want to take the theological route and want to be academics or whatever, and those who have a call without academic qualifications. That call, definitely, let's run with it, but let's also ensure that we equip our people to be the best for the call that they have received so that they can serve. Otherwise, we run the risk. I get up today and I say I have a call. Who is to verify whether I'm telling the truth or not? One of the reasons why we find ourselves in the space that we're in right now is that anyone can get up and say, I have a call, and they are accountable to no one, and they are answerable to no one, and what they teach, no one can verify. And next thing, we start complaining. So the suggestion really, in as far as professionalization is concerned, is for this body, which is why I said I'll talk about the Christian side, because that's the side that I understand better in as far as this aspect is concerned, to come together and agree on what it considers as the professional standard, and therefore professionalize in that sort of perspective. So even if a person says, I have a call, they satisfy at least that requirement to run their entity in a professional manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, fortunately technology has favored me, and the documents, I think, they are with you now. We've been to different provinces, Limpopo, we've been to Northern Cape, we've been here, we've been to Gauteng, talking to pastors and leaders regarding these issues, you know, that are flagged within the report. And what we've learned, you see that in that PowerPoint presentation there, the last part there where, you know, it's differentiated, that there are two issues at play. There are things that speak to belief within the report, the CRL report, which we don't endorse, because they'll create more problem than solutions. And under the caption, proposed act, something like that. So we've been talking to different pastors in those areas, and there are things which deals with compliance, which most of them have to do with state organizations like your SARS. And the core thing with all of them is two things: the educational aspect and also the enforcement aspect, like the question of visas. I mean, pastors, visa and pastors, like the likes of, you know, our African brothers, when they come to South Africa, which church knows? I mean, we didn't know there's a person from, you know, our neighboring country in the name of maybe the likes of Prophet Bushiri. We didn't know of such a person. But there's an institution, instead, several of them, institutions of state, who knows who's coming to the country even before we know the church. Now, if the report speaks to that, whose fault is it? Like the report spoke on the issue of some people came with visas saying, no, they came for work, and all of a sudden, churches. Now, who are supposed to say, man, you said you came here for work, so in other words, you came here in false pretenses, so go back home, because you lied to us. In terms of SARS, like I highlighted earlier, that if mandate is three things, it's education, it's collection and enforcement, and you only pick, you know, collection and enforcement, and you forget education. Now, what about that part? Like somebody once asked that now, then how does an officer now arrest himself? Because of, if we are to say to the church that they are not complying in 1, 2, 3, have you complied as the organ of state on the mandate that you've been given, which is some of those things we've been raising also with the CRL, that there's an educational element within your act. Why do you prioritize certain parts of the act and not the education? Or is that part of education as equally important as other parts as well? Things like that, and which is something. So basically, our findings is that there's a gap in terms of skills development and educating pastors on things that has to do with compliance, especially even issues of how money is moved, you know, issues that are to do with Reserve Bank. You know, all pastors know is that this is just an offering. I'm sending it to the bishop in Zimbabwe. So how is done in terms of processes, the legal processes to take money there? Ask any other pastor. How do they know? The first time they heard of such a thing is from what was flagged from the report. And we've been, you know, engaging pastors, conscientizing them about these things. And then we are saying, on our part as COCC, that, you know, if we can better educate our pastors and educate within the understanding of training and education, as I alluded earlier, that I'm in that space. You know, education is not information sharing. It's not telling people something. When hence we have the system called outcome-based education, where you process a person until they prove that they are competent in handling whatever. You cannot just dish out like on the part of your Department of Social Development. They dish out, you know, after you have registered there and say, oh, they bring out letters to say, no, report after a year and so forth for compliance issues, and they give you that document to read. For starters, can you read? Do you understand what is written? Do you know how to write a report? Things like that. So we need to educate our people.
Oh, Bishop, and when you finish, you should just close this meeting with prayer.
Ma'am, just two things. One is, I'm keen to know what COC stands for. Okay. It's Council of Charismatic Churches. Thank you. I was vindicated by, I think, one of the speakers, I think it was you, sir, who said the Sierra Rights Commission was the complainant, the prosecutor. Because everybody, everywhere I go, I'm told I complained against churches, and I never did. Of course, Professor Musoma knows how this happened. It was because I wrote the letter that went to Human Rights Commission complaining about Pastor Mgoni and human rights. And that letter was transferred to Sierra Rights Commission because they were initiating a process. And the Sierra Rights Commission erroneously sent a letter of summons to every religious organization in the country in the name of Madusi Bumrah. And so I'm sitting next to my president, Bishop Siwa. Bishop Sono calls and says, what have I done? What are you complaining about? I said, what do you mean? I just received something, a summons that says, my Lucy Boomlan of SSCC has complained about my conduct. I must come and appear. So when I finished, Bishop Siwa says, I was waiting to talk to you about that too, because the Methodist Church has been told, which I'm presiding bishop of, that you have complained against us. So I'll just make it very clear. I only complained as a result of that meeting that was convened over Pastor Mguni about him. By mandate of that meeting, I never wrote against you. I'm saying this because everywhere I go, I get this question, and I had to write to them and threaten them with lightning and thunder, whispers and death if they don't withdraw. And they kindly did withdraw the summons. But I really, please, there is no such a thing, and that all of us stand to represent our interests as best we can in the right way for the life of the people we worship with and serve.
Okay. I think it's up us, and we said when we asked to be granted extension, we said we're going to be out of this on at 18th, and it's exactly 18th. I think that concludes the business for the day. Let me say that tomorrow we are going to start at 10. And then when we start at 10, it will be the Alliance of Pentecostal and Charismatic Churches. She's going to send you, she's going to type the revised program. Then it's going to be the African Transformation Movement. Then ACDP, we postpone one item for the Institute for Professional Pastors, Reverends and Ministers. It's going to come after the ACDP. And then you have Kakum FSA. Then, yeah, that's how it is. But it's going to share with you the revised agenda in the morning. Then it's going to be the commission input. Then the academics, then we will forward. Tomorrow you must finish after 1, or at 1, so that from 1 o'clock lunch, then people leave. But basically that's tomorrow's agenda. So we want to thank everybody who stayed put throughout, and I think the contribution has been thought-provoking. Resource person, you don't know President of ATM, Deacon Zogula. Little did I know that Deacon, so the bishop, it has been an humbling experience, but the basic message that one picks up here is that we all want to, the status quo to change. At least that determination across the board, that one, and it's so encouraging. Let's continue to engage until we find each other. We might have differences, but I think the art of persuasion, so that at the end of the day we reach the common ground, because I think we need we want to restore our moral fiber back. That's the bottom line. So till we meet again tomorrow at 10, make sure you have your breakfast at your restaurant, in the morning. We are operating under budgetary constraints, but we thought if we postpone it to the next term, it's going to be. So that's why we said we are prepared to work with the minimum as long as we achieve our agenda. We want so that when we come the next term, Parliament is going to recess next week. Then we have a program of action that will assist facilitate our work to make sure that we facilitate what Reverend Tom was saying there. That was so powerful. But not necessarily that everybody who contributed, we had meaningful contribution today. I'm happy to say, oh, this sector is rich. It's so rich, this sector. And then there's potential. So why can't we utilize it to our maximum benefit as a country? So with this few words, Bishop, you open this meeting. Can you close it with a prayer and pray for those that came here with mixed feelings and emotions to say we are all working towards one goal and objective, unity, a unity in action. Unity in action. So as you pray, so that those that are still going to get their transport home, they must arrive safe, sleep well, and wake up fresh tomorrow. Right? So over to you, Bishop. And once the Bishop does that, the meeting gets adjourned. Sure.
Holy God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the inspiration you have given to your people who will express themselves all according to your will, so that all the ideas may be put together in a way that will achieve your will for our society. You have sent your daughters and sons to come to this meeting, and we now thank you for the fulfillment of your will through their mouths. Bless you for the leadership of this committee and the members of Parliament that have given their time to listen to these engagements. We thank you also for the leadership of the Civil Rights Commission that has been soldiering along, but at this time we might be able to find each other in a way that enables us to walk together into a future that we can all be proud of. We pray also that you may accommodate the wishes of our chair as she prays for those who came here with mixed feelings. We ask that those mixed feelings may be dashed as we go into a time that all of us have the confidence that we belong to a common interest for one society that is workable, a capable state, and capable churches. We pray this in the name of him who said, I will be with you till the end of the age, even this time. Jesus, amen. Amen.